Sure is, along with our guest, Dr. Michael Sala, and we'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM with your calls. Don't go away. Michael, how did you get interested in this entire area?
Well, for me, it was really trying to understand why international politics is so difficult in terms of conflicts that perpetuate. I was wanting to understand why these conflicts just go on and on and on, because what I've been interested in for many years is peace. I'm a peace researcher by trade. I mean, that's what I trained in. And so what I'm trying to do is promote peace in the international arena. And so when you see conflicts just breaking out continuously, you try to understand, well, what are the deeper causes driving these conflicts? And that took me to the whole ET phenomenon. And so now I can see how this phenomenon relates to the issue of world peace, which incidentally is actually the theme of the conference that I'm organizing, extraterrestrial civilizations and world peace, because those two things, I think, are very closely connected.
This is the one in Hawaii?
That's right. That's the one that's going to be here from June 9 to 11 in Hawaii, and actually Paul Hallier will be speaking at that. But I think this will be his first U.S. Appearance, so he won't I don't believe he's scheduled to speak anywhere else in the U.S., so this will be his first appearance in the U.S. to discuss the ET issue from the perspective of space weapons and how that's a policy issue. So it'll be the first time Americans can hear him here in the U.S.
Do you know if Linda Moulton Howe was slated to go there? If not, I'm going to check in with her and see if she's going to be out that way.
I don't believe she is, but Paula Harris will be here. And as you know, Paula just did an interview with Paul Hallier up in Toronto. So she'll be coming here, and there'll be a number of other people coming along, some high-profile people. We have an ambassador, John McDonald. So he's another kind of high-level official. He's worked for three U.S. presidents. He's served as an ambassador to four U.N. conferences for the U.S., and he's going to be talking about the ET phenomenon, and he's very interested in what Paul Hallier has said. So I think this is what happens when you have someone like Paul Hallier coming out. Other high-profile people suddenly take interest because they know, well, if this other guy is interested, then maybe it's not there's something to this field. And so the conference will actually have a few high-level people dealing with these issues of space weapons and ET civilizations and what that means for world peace.
What do you think would happen to a presidential candidate, let's use 2008 as an example, who in addition to his agenda, because you do have to talk about terrorism, you got to talk about getting us out of Iraq, and when that's going to happen, you got to talk about getting a better economy going and jumpstart it again. But what do you think if he also added to that agenda, I'm going to get to the bottom of the extraterrestrial situation. We're going to go public with it. My sources tell me it's real. Do you think that would help or hurt him or her?
Well, I can only go from the case of Hillary Clinton as a prospective Democratic candidate. And from what I know, both Clintons were intensely interested in the UFO phenomenon when they began. And President Clinton at the time told Webster Hubble, who was one of his close advisors, to actually go out and find the answers to two questions. One was, who killed President Kennedy? And the second was, well, what's going on with UFOs? And as far as Webster Hubble was concerned, he couldn't find anything. But, I mean, Stephen Greer did talk about briefings that were occurring. Lawrence Rockefeller was involved in these briefings with the Clintons, and both Clintons were briefed on this phenomenon, and apparently Bill and Hillary Clinton were at the Teton Ranch of Lawrence Rockefeller, and they were briefed, and I heard that after they had been briefed for a number of hours, the morning after, Hillary Clinton came down and told him, don't speak to us again about this issue. And that was it. And I think they took the decision, and this was back in 95, that if they talked about UFOs, that Bill Clinton wouldn't be reelected in 96. And I think that the fact that Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton haven't spoken about UFOs or ETs since suggests that if Hillary does run for president in 2008, that it'll probably be on a platform that doesn't explicitly address the ET issue.
Yeah.
Because
you know, unless you can show an alien or a craft, if you just merely talk about it, I think it would hurt your campaign, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, that's the lesson we learned from Hillary Clinton. But, I mean, there are people like Dennis Kucinich who hopefully would be a little more daring. And I think he knows about this issue. I don't think he's decided to come forward yet for various reasons. As we know, politicians can be easily ridiculed. But
sure.
At a certain point, he may decide to come forward with this. And this is, again, where, you know, people like Paul Hellyer and the Ambassador MacDonald, as people like that come forward, start talking about these issues, then it becomes easier for politicians to come forward.
Stephen Bassett tried to make it his campaign when he was running for Congress in Maryland. It didn't work for him.
Well, that's right. I don't recall the percentage of votes he got. I think it was just a few percent.
Yeah, so, it was pretty low.
Yeah, it didn't make much of a dent, but definitely he got it into the primary there of the presidential race, so that was important.
Let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to our wild card line. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hi, George. When I talked to Tommy, I told him I don't want my name to be used.
Okay.
I got just a quick story for you, and hello, doctor. Nice to talk to you this morning.
Hi.
Someone that I'm very, very close to. I was sent some tapes from a person that used to be stationed at Fort Huachuca here in Arizona. And one of the tapes is out of Groom Lake Area 51. And the other one is a tape that you may be familiar with. It's called Above Top Secret.
Oh, sure.
And it was the first time that I ever had the tape in the house. And the person I'm talking about, we were sitting there watching it. And suddenly some video came on about a crash site in Turkey. And the person that I'm telling you about was actually at that crash site and was laughing. And I said, why are you laughing? He said, well, and this person said, well, those pictures have been reversed. Negatives were reversed on it. But went on to tell me that what they did, she worked in a unit in Turkey where they didn't wear any uniforms with any American insignia. They always wore civilian clothes. When they went to the crash site, if anybody was doing any flyovers, it looked like the French were handling the craft and the occupants. There were occupants. She went on to describe in amazing detail of what was coming up on the tape. And I know she had no way of ever seeing this tape before. It's the first time I'd had it. And we'd been together for years. And then eventually on the tape, it progressed. And just everything she was saying was happening. I don't have any idea why in the world that this isn't coming out. It needs to come out. There's too many people, and these are high-level people.
Did we shoot this craft down, or did it just crash on its own?
That's, you know, it's funny you asked that, because I said, wait a minute, I said, was this knocked out of the sky? What had happened? And from what she would tell me, and, you know, they actually didn't want to tell me the full details, was that a Mirage fighter had engaged this. The Mirage went down, and then this craft went down also. I said, well, what happened to the fighter pilot? She has still to this day never answered that. It was amazing, because when she went into the detail of what these occupants looked like, it's like everything you always see that Whitley Strieber describes, or
mm-hmm.
you know, the different deals. And this is a person that at one time worked for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, handling communications from the Pentagon, White House, to Looking Glass, worked for Reagan through the administration. 100%, without a doubt, you most trustworthy person I've ever met personally, and truthfully had never had any belief in any of this. And then when this all came out, I'm like, all these years we've known each other, why in the world didn't you ever tell me this? And she said, we were totally sworn to where it was never going to ever be told. I would never tell my children about it. But when she saw the video, that the whole story came out. And it comes down to the point to where what you're talking about with, you know, like the Star Wars weapons and like the SDI initiative that Reagan did, I truthfully, just personally, my own belief and my experiences in the military, this has been going on and on and on for years. I was afraid that when I talked to Tommy, I definitely don't want to give a name, and I hope to God the feds aren't at my house tomorrow. But
well, if they are, you let us know. Then we really know they're monitoring everything.
Well, you know, I think you're right when you talk about the Illuminati. I think there's somebody controlling all of this, and sooner or later, you know, somebody's filing. Maybe we're going to need one to land on the White House lawn with reporters covering it.
Yeah, the day the Earth stood still. Hey, thanks. Appreciate your call. That's very interesting, Michael.
Well, it's just another confirmation for this whole crash retrieval process that's been set up. I mean, as you know, the Woods team actually have been having a series of crash retrieval conferences in Las Vegas, and I think their fourth one is coming up in November, and I'll actually be speaking at that. Their book, the Ryan Woods book, talked about 74 crash retrieval cases, but I mean, I don't know if that had the turkey case in there. That didn't kind of strike a bell. But I think there's probably many more crashes that have occurred, and not all of them, of course, are in the book. And so that would suggest that we probably are having many more ETs being targeted and being brought down than we could probably imagine. And so that just makes it such an important policy issue to just learn about this whole field and how they're being targeted, what space weapons exist, and how many are being brought down. I mean, this is something that for many people will be a great shock, that our military can be shooting down ET craft and have been doing it for decades. And I mean, I don't know if the caller would ever be willing to contact me and give me some more details, but I would appreciate knowing just when this crash in Turkey happened and any more information they could share. That would be great.
What website do you prefer they use to get to?
I can just go to the exopolitics.org website.
Very good. You know, the late Leonard Stringfield, he was a pioneer in crash retrievals. Did you ever meet him?
Unfortunately, no. He was a little before my time. As I've said, I only came into this field in 2001, so I'm still kind of fairly new to the field. And I mean, it's taken me a few years to kind of get up to speed in terms of what's really been going on. And takes a while to read all the literature, get to meet the key people. And unfortunately, people like Leonard Stringfield and Philip Corso, I mean, they were before my time, so I never got a chance to meet them. But in some cases, I can watch videos, read their books, and that way get a feel for what they had experienced.
Yeah, I talked to Stringfield a couple times back in the mid-70s, and quite a guy. Let's go east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
I also would not like to reveal my name at this point because I have had not only one encounter but several encounters with various UFOs, as they are called. Also, I have had encounters with the United States government. At one point in time in my life history or career, I was a talk show hostess, and I revealed my experiences on air, like you do so openly, and as a result of that, the ATF, the CIA, and the FBI ransacked, actually slammed me and my son to the ground with a gun to our heads, ransacked our home at the time we were living in Hawaii, and took all my files on the UFO. So you know, and I know, and everyone knows that this is for real, and they want to keep it under wraps as much as possible. After I finally had this happen in Hawaii, I moved to Arizona, and I went to visit Travis Walton up in Snowflake. And that was a very interesting conversation. Needless to say, everybody knows his name with the movie.
Sure.
And his book and all this stuff. But I have personally had encounters, and close encounters, not just seeing them. I even sent your radio station a photograph and a short note of a UFO that I had taken a picture of up in the Wisconsin Dells. And my very first encounter happened when I was 4 years old on a fishing trip, believe it or not, in Wisconsin, where it was documented by police officials and everything. because it had landed in the field, and everybody had stopped on the road to see what was going on.
Sounds like that's what kind of pushed you in the broadcasting field. Huh?
Absolutely. I was just fascinated by it. And I was not only, you know, interested in UFOs, but I'm what they call a spiritual investigator. So I wanted to see if there was anything to this, those are devils in space deal, you know what I mean?
All right. You know, Michael, some people believe that they are demons. What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, demons, angels, I mean, maybe that is the kind of, those are the terms that were used back a century or ago to describe the phenomenon that we're experiencing now. So maybe the demons now are kind of the kind of extraterrestrials people often refer to as kind of reptilians, shape-shifting reptilians and so forth. And the angels are the kind of Nordic blonde-looking ETs that give people rides in spaceships and have a great time. And so maybe this is really just a modern version of what has been happening for hundreds and thousands of years. I mean, the ET phenomenon, we find records of that and the cave drawings of the indigenous people. So this is not a new phenomenon. So I think when we look at terms like demons and angels, we've got to bring in the whole ET phenomenon to really get a picture of what was happening.
How come we don't have a lot of great data of the 1952 buzz over the White House?
Well, that's a fascinating case, George. I mean, that was well documented in terms of lots of witnesses, newspaper coverage. There was radar of the flyover, but of course, at the time, Project Blue Book was occurring, and Edward Ruppelt was in charge. That's Captain Ruppelt. And he basically was denied access. I mean, I was fascinated to read how he was wanting to investigate the 52 flyover, and he was denied a car, that the military denied him a car and said, well, if you want to investigate this, you're going to have to hire a taxi, and you're going to have to pay for it out of your own money and get reimbursed up to a certain... I mean, this is just ridiculous that someone could conduct a UFO, official UFO investigation of something like that. And what that suggests to me is that... that was being covered up, that the Air Force was not serious. It was keeping a lot of this information out of the mainstream. The Blue Book investigation was really just a public relations exercise. And I think we've just continued to see the UFO phenomenon kind of dealt with in this way, where information is kept out of the public realm and witnesses are intimidated, like the earlier caller.
That's when I think, Michael, the deals were cut. I think once that happened and we were powerless to do anything, I think that's when we decided somehow to cut the deal. What's interesting is how we made contact in order to cut the deal. How do you think that happened?
Well, I guess they could have done it through some kind of electronic process, radio waves. There may have been some kind of telepathic communication. I know that this telepathic communication is the way in which extraterrestrials most often communicate. I mean, Corso talked about that. Clifford Stone talks about that. Many whistleblowers have talked about that telepathic communication. So possibly the military just were able to get some of their people to telepathically communicate and meet and cut deals. But certainly we know that Eisenhower did have a meeting in 54 at Edwards Air Force Base in February 20, which was, incidentally, 9 days before the Bravo test at the Bikini Atoll. So that, to me, is a big giveaway that this was related to the thermonuclear testing program that the U.S. had. But that was
Stay with us. We'll be back with final phone calls with our guest, Dr. Michael Sala, on Coast to Coast AM. Well, tomorrow night's Coast to Coast program, basically, it's going to be a reality check. So make sure you're part of that show. When we come back, we'll take final phone calls with our guest, Dr. Michael Sala, and you on Coast to Coast AM. You know, Michael, if we need space weaponry, that tells me that this universe is a very violent universe, and it just didn't happen here. You know, I thought evil only would permeated planet Earth. I guess it's all over the place. That's somewhat disappointing, Michael.
Well, yeah, this is going to be the key issue here to work out, well, why are the space weapons necessary? Is it because there are some kind of bad ETs out there that we need to protect ourselves? Or is it because the military feel that they need space weapons so that they can improve their negotiating position? Because let's not forget that one of the reasons that the military believed that the space weapons were necessary was because they were frightened of disclosure. So that what that tells us is that, well, if disclosure went ahead, then that fear wouldn't be there. It couldn't be exploited. So maybe you could have decent agreements. So maybe the solution is not so much having space weapons, but maybe the solution is disclosure. Because if you fear something, obviously the other side can exploit it. And that clearly was what concerned Corso and maybe what makes the present situation something that is so untenable in terms of lots of ET ships being shot down, and we don't know what casualties are occurring on the military side, but certainly you can't expect ET ships to be shot down without there being casualties here. So we need to look at that.
I wonder if, any military soldiers have been shot because they were fighting ETs.
Well, I kind of try to recall cases of any soldiers reflecting on that. I know that there was the Frank Fischina book where he talked about the Braxton, the Flatwoods monster, and he talked about what he thought were aerial war between ET ships and some military aircraft, and that there was casualties on both sides. So he was referring to something that I assume he has some kind of empirical data to verify. So we can assume that, yes, there have been casualties on both sides, and that some people have come forward to talk about what happened in terms of casualties on our side.
Let's close the hour by taking final calls. West of the Rockies, you're on the line with us. Hi there.
Hello, George?
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hi, George. Gosh, I finally get to talk to you. You know, I've enjoyed your show for 10 years. You and Art have really amazed me with the substance that you guys have.
Well,
really
we thank
shared
you.
With us. I've got a comment and a question for you, guys, Michael. Michael mentioned briefly something about a book that someone wrote that 74 extraterrestrials were shot down. Is that correct, Michael?
That's right. That's Ryan Wood's book, Magic Eyes Only.
Okay. This is what perked my ear up, and this is what prompted me to call, is because I happen to be a numeric Bible scholar. Okay. I'm Gary, and I'm calling from L.A., L.A., California.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, 74 is a very interesting number. You've got to understand this, because I understand the spiritual significance of numbers in the Bible. Now, 74 times 9 is 666. Now, the meaning of 666 is all that man can aspire to be, or it's a supernatural thing. Okay, if you apply in the English, which I say the 1611 version of the King James Bible, it has got a numeric template over its very, all the words in it. Okay, it's accurate. Every single chapter number, every word number, every Old English spelling, all of it. If you add it up in English, A equals 1, Z equals 26, times 9, Lucifer equals 666, Jesus equals 666, Muhammad equals 666. You guys can all check this out. But extraterrestrials, in my mind, have to do, in a spiritual sense, in relationship to the Bible. Okay, you mentioned something about demons, but see, it's the 74. That's the thing. See, 74 is the optimal thing that everything else is compared to. If you add Katrina up, the hurricane.
Well, do you think, Michael, there's a great deception here with this, even with Gary's number system?
Well, I'm not quite sure of the merits of this, I mean, I know that this Ryan Wood's book is basically just a description of 74 crash retrieval cases, and there are probably many more that didn't make it into the book that should be there. So I don't know how much attention we should put on that number of 74. It just seems to be what he's come up with at the moment. But certainly it is disturbing that 74 cases of UFOs have been recorded as having crashed, and that secret retrieval operations have been conducted, and this has been kept out of the public arena, and some or many of those 74 crashes may have been caused by space weapons. So we need to look at this again as a policy issue that that I'll keep referring to, and that Paul Hellyer has brought up in his talks.
Let's go to our wild card line. Your turn on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Robert from Phoenix, KFYI.
Sure, Robert.
Hey, I have a question for the doctor.
Okay.
This is what I see. I see a possible resource war occurring within our own star system. As you know, what I understand is that Mars, the ice caps are starting to melt down, and across our star system, it's getting warmer. Or do you see a monsters are due on Maple Street scenario where we just annihilate ourselves to the point we're so decimated that it makes it, we become easy pickings?
A resource war, Michael. You know what? Zachariah Sitchin says they were after our gold. Who knows?
Water.
Maybe they're coming here. Yeah, maybe the water. Maybe of course they can have some of the water. We have too
also,
much.
Eight billion people on this planet make a large protein source.
Well, I think we do need to consider that. We need to consider that we are a resource from the perspective of extraterrestrials, that the planet, in terms of the wildlife, the plants, and the natural resources, and, of course, the human biological resources, that we are considered resources, especially since we behave in a very kind of irresponsible way. And from the perspective of extraterrestrials, maybe taking some of the biological resources off the planet is an appropriate thing. I mean, what if some extraterrestrials simply come along and make an agreement that, well, you know, we know you have a lot of people filling your jails and a lot of people on the streets without homes, without any state support. Well, you know, you don't want these people. You don't provide for them. So why don't you give them to us and we'll take them off to a better place. So, I mean, there you have a kind of resource exchange program happening, and there you would have maybe different ET groups wanting these resources, and so maybe there might be competition between ETs and the government or the military are making deals kind of benefit from whatever resources are being taken off. So, I mean, these are things we need to look at seriously because we can't assume that the extraterrestrials are all benevolent, loving, advanced beings here to help us. I think that's the case for many, but not all. Some are here to basically utilize us as a resource, and we need to respond to that.
Being advanced doesn't necessarily mean you're benevolent.
That's exactly right. I mean, we know that from our history, that the most advanced technological races are by no means the most benevolent. And as we know, colonialism was a very brutal exercise where in many cases, peaceful indigenous peoples were wiped out from more advanced but very cruel colonial powers. So why would ETs be all that different?
Let's go to our wild card line. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hey, George, it's Roger. How you, Michael, doing?
Good, Roger. Thank you.
Hey, I got a two-part. And one, a couple weeks ago when you had the deal on there about Skinwalker, I live out in that area about a few hours from there, and I picked up the book and was reading it. And the UFO in the book is the same UFO I saw in 74 back in October, or back in 73 in October back in Ohio, right before I got out of high school. Same thing, actually, and I'm wondering what your guest, Michael, what he knows or thinks about UFOs down in the Skinwalker area.
I don't know about that case, Roger. I haven't read the Skinwalker book or am familiar with that area, so I really can't answer the question.
Okay.
But something's been going on there, Roger. I'll tell you that.
I know. I'm going to, next time I get some time off, I'm going to didn't even know about it. I'm going to take, I'm just go over that way for a couple nights and just check things out and everything, see what it's like over in there. But
all right, no, call us back when you're out there.
I will, George. Take care. It's good talking to you.
Okay, my friend. Thanks. Appreciate it. West of the Rockies, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning, George. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
This is Angela from Silicon Valley, and okay. I live in between Mount Hamilton, which has a radar tower, Mount Umanum, which has the Pave Pause microwave field, and by Moffitt, Lockheed, and NASA Ames. And I wanted to say that there have been light going on from Moffitt, like elliptical around one singular light, and it seems as though they might be testing maybe some of this technology that we've traded for.
Probably, especially in that area.
Right, and we also have, because everybody's, and I've seen two craft in the last 2 weeks.
How close?
One was probably over Moffitt Field. And I'm an intuitive, and I have odd dimensional dreams. And I had a dream where there was a craft, and I swear this was about 6 months ago, and then I had a dream that the craft that I saw over Moffitt was the same craft in the dream that I had, where I had to tell them to come and get some carbon fiber that was only available on Earth.
Well, what did this look like, Angela?
Let's see. It was, I want to say it was conical. Right, and it had different like triangles around it, but it was rather flat. It was very odd shaped, and it was metallic.
Well, I'll tell you what, Art's going to have Peter Davenport on this weekend from the National UFO Reporting Center, and Angela, you should call in and at least tell him a little bit of what you saw. First time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, sir. Thanks.
Avil in San Antonio, Texas.
Hi. Go ahead, Avil.
Sorry, a little nervous. I actually, I used to work for a gentleman that was retired military that is a pilot, and he actually was in a division that chased UFOs. That was his assignment. Are you all aware of that? I'm sure, I guess you are. I don't know that there's actually an Air Force division that answers to UFOs or to the calls. And he told me one time that probably three out of four calls are explainable, but there's a lot of them that aren't.
Did he ever say whether any of his guys never came back?
No, he never mentioned that. I mean, I can give you his name off the air. Y'all can look him up. He's a retired colonel, and I'm sure that there's some kind of records of what he does or did.
Why did he tell you this?
Because I was working on a horse farm with him. He was a retired colonel. He has horses.
Yeah.
He raises horses for the government, actually for the pentathlon teams. And I don't know. He had confidence in me. We were just talking about it one day, and he's an older gentleman, and I asked him if he ever saw weird stuff, and he just really wouldn't go into it. I mean, he just really wouldn't, but he said that there's stuff out there.
He's a believer, huh?
Oh, yeah, he's a believer. And he's one of these gentlemen, when you talk to him, he's not one of these guys that will pull your leg and stuff like that. I mean, he's a quite reputable retired pilot from the military.
All right, make sure you email Michael. You can just get his website off of coasttocoastam.com, but it's exopolitics.org. Michael, had you ever heard of a special unit that chased UFOs?
No, I haven't heard of that. I mean, I've heard of the special unit that retrieves or investigates UFO crashes or materials or sightings, but certainly nothing that actually chases them, because obviously a conventional military craft just wouldn't have the capacity to be able to reach different parts of the United States within the time that many UFOs could pass. I mean, you would probably have flights from air bases in the vicinity that would be monitoring these UFO sightings, but certainly I haven't heard that. Maybe the gentleman that Avil had spoken to was part of an elite unit that was flying some non-conventional craft, something that had far more speed than we know with the conventional craft. So maybe that's the case, but I hadn't heard of that kind of a division before.
I'd like to talk to that old retired guy. Wouldn't you?
Well, it would be great to have people like that come forward and say exactly what was that they experienced. But, I mean, it takes a lot of courage for these people to come and talk about classified information that they were sworn to secrecy and they still feel that they're threatened. As I said, I mean, there are people that still have a lot of trouble who do reveal classified information. And I've had people contact me and tell me things, and then they say that they've had things happen to them as a result of the conversation. So I'm certain that people who are witnesses or served in the military, that they are being monitored if they have things to share and they get in touch with kind of UFO or exopolitics researchers.
Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. Your turn. Hi there.
Yeah, Poplar Bluff, 9:30 a.m. My question alludes to God being an entity, extraterrestrial entity that breathe life or consciousness into human beings. And I was wondering if your guests had any information on UFOs or extraterrestrials pre-Adam and Eve.
Going way back, Michael.
Well, I mean, there's quite a bit of information in the Zechariah Sitchin material talking about that. And what we know from his translations of the Sumerian text is that Adam and Eve were created as a result of some hybridization experiment that extraterrestrials called the Anunnaki organized, and that they used some of the primates on the Earth at the time and mixed the DNA of the primates with the DNA of the Anunnaki to create eventually a hybrid being that became known as Adam, and then they created a partner, and so that is supposedly the source, according to the Sumerian legends, of exactly who the creators of Adam and Eve were. So that would be suggesting that, yes, the creator, God, as depicted in some texts, is very likely an ET. So I hope that's answered the question.